Flashback Twin Cities, 2nd of March, Saturday morning. A cold morning here on KLDB Club 1220. James, how is it going in there? Is it as cold in your booth as it was outside?
Oh no, it's nice and toasty in here. George has been keeping my space a little bit nice and warm for me.
I had the space heater there, I think, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's March in like a lamb, even though it is a little bit brisk out there. But hopefully a few weeks from now, we'll be talking about this great spring weather.
It's one of these weird, I stepped outside. I know it's like 7 degrees out there, but it doesn't feel that bad just because the wind isn't pouring down the river.
You know, we talk a lot about weather on this show, and it's only because it's usually that first pulse you get when you walk outside on Saturday morning and feel the wind against your face or the cold air. But we have a guest today, Roy Findon, who does know a lot about weather, and also a broadcaster at KSDP and radio and an instructor at Brown College for 35 years. He'll be talking to us about his days at KSDP and instructing at Brown. So did you notice the gas prices have been going up a lot?
Oh, I've noticed.
Yeah, I think it was $3.65, I think, when I went to work one day, and it was $3.95, I think, when I had to get gas that afternoon.
Jeez. Yeah, what was it? $2.99, $3.05 around election time?
Funny how that happens, right?
Yeah, it just kind of bumped up. Strange.
Well, different show for that topic. But, you know, the big concern 30 years ago was, are gas prices too low? Can gas companies survive with a low gas prices? Prices are falling. We're getting all this foreign oil, and our gas prices were dropping. So I want to play a clip. This is from 1984, and Debbie Ely, who was on our show about 2 months ago, she provided this clip for me. This is her reporting on gas prices in the Twin Cities.
But this year, the opposite seems to be true, and Debbie Ely is here to explain why the good news.
Don, the reason is really simple economics. The present plentiful supplies have resulted in lower prices.
Prices at Twin Cities service stations have dropped at least a penny over the last month. Nationwide, prices are about 11.5% lower than in May 1981.
It's basically due to decline in consumption. Consumption is down 20% from what it was in 1978.
The lower consumption comes at a time when oil refineries are loaded with gas. Gas is a byproduct of home heating oil, and they processed a lot of home heating oil last winter because the temperatures were so cold. In fact, some oil analysts say that even if the oil supply from the Persian Gulf is cut off due to war, we'd still have enough supply for 5 or 6 months. But while low prices and ample supplies give motorists cause to smile, service station operators are wearing long faces.
Their margin is at an all-time low right now. When you compare 1972 to today, 1972, a service station dealer was making a 25% gross profit on gasoline. Today, they're making a 5% gross profit on gasoline. So.
Brian Edisfold says most dealers must supplement their gas sales with convenience shops or repair service.
Well, what if this goes on, then does that mean the prices are going to continue to drop throughout the summer?
Prices are expected to remain stable, Don. They may drop a cent or two from the present $1.15 for regular self-serve and $1.21 for unleaded self-serve.
Kind of makes you feel bad, though, for the...
Well, what an error that must have been.
Oh, it must have been absolutely devastating.
Average gas price in 1984 was 93 cents.
Well, I know that a couple of people that I know of who work at a gas station, they say the company doesn't make a whole lot of money off the gas. Like they said, they make it off of concessions.
Right.
Selling those little, breakfast taquitos and things like that for $2 for a couple.
And imagine those that work in the gas stations get the brunt of the wrath of the customers that come in and complain about the high gas prices.
Oh, of course, because it's the attendant who's taking your credit card that's in charge of everything.
One other sad event, in addition to gas prices going up, and this is actually a little more serious, Bonnie Franklin, actress from One Day at a Time, passed away yesterday. Hmm. Franklin was 69. She played a very young single mom of two teenage kids. She was 29 when that show started in 1975, or actually very early 30s. Died of pancreatic cancer. The family,
oh, no.
Unfortunate. Ever watched the show?
No, I haven't.
Schneider was the best part of the show, but Anne Romano, Bonnie Franklin's character, was a great part of that show. I looked around for a commercial that Bonnie Franklin did. I didn't want to play the One Day at a Time theme or clips from the show, but because you'll see that on all the tabloid shows the next couple of days.
Sure, sure.
But in the last episode of MASH, which was 30 years ago this last Thursday, and we talked about that last week, a TV movie was promoted. And this was, you know, I watched this clip a few times, and I'm still not sure what the movie's about, but Bonnie Franklin stars in it, and I thought we could just kind of play that in homage to Ms. Franklin. Let's listen to this commercial.
Then, Bonnie Franklin and Robert Klein are looking for love in the funniest way. Time Daily co-stars in Your Place,
Sadist,
or Mine, right after Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Wednesday.
This is...
So her only line in that promo was sadist. I'm not sure what, it wasn't part of the collection. I'm reading her bio here from New York Times. I don't see that as being one of her highlights of her film career. But that movie aired 30 years ago this week, and may she rest in peace.
I wonder how she felt about that being her only line in that whole thing.
I'm sure the movie had some great lines. They had to pick the best line to promote the movie. Well, let's take a break. We come back, we will have Roy Findon on KLB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLB Club 1220. I am Tom Osmond. Next 50 minutes or so, we're going to talk a little bit about the broadcasting past with a friend of mine, Roy Findon. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning, Tom.
I was fortunate enough to meet Roy. We were at the Paddock Museum Hall of Fame dinner 4 years ago, perhaps.
I think it was
the year Louis Anderson hosted, I think.
Yes.
We were both there at the same table, and I was fortunate enough to talk to Roy and said, you might have some broadcast material I could use on tcmedianow.com.
You bet.
That's right. And to those listening, if you want to check out some of that material, tcmedianow.com, tcmedianow on Facebook. Roy is a member of the Museum of Broadcasting Hall of Fame, the Paddock Museum Hall of Fame, inducted in 2002. And I'll just read a couple segments from his bio on the, on the Hall of Fame.
All right.
A talented broadcaster in his own right, Roy Findon's greatest contribution to the industry have been as a teacher.
Mm.
So many people who saw you on the air might not know that you were also an instructor at Brown, what's now called Brown College,
yes,
for 35 years.
It's true.
So tell me a little bit about Minneapolis native, and many people we talk here,
yes,
came here to work and then stayed here. But you grew up here.
It's true. Yes, in Minneapolis. And in fact, if I tried to pinpoint the first time I appeared on the radio, this will surprise you. It surprises me. I don't often remember it. In first grade at Calhoun Grade School, which is where Calhoun Square is now. That was the grade school. It was June Dairy Month, and that's always big, of course, in Minnesota.
Sure.
And on the John Ford Morning News, 7:45 a.m., sponsored by the milk producers, they selected some grade school folk to come in and read a one-sentence promotional line about milk. One sentence. And I was one of the four that was selected. Oh, boy. And so I think there were four of us. We rode the bus downtown to the Wesley Temple Building, to the WTCN studio, and the teacher was along, and we went up, and we read our line.
What was the line?
Oh, I have no idea.
Milk does a body good?
Something nice about milk.
Did you invent got milk?
Good heavens, no.
You'd be a millionaire.
If I was in first grade, that would be 1946. So I don't even think they had audio tape. I think they recorded us on a transcription. But anyway, then it was on the next morning on the 7:45 John Ford News.
Did the whole family gather around to listen to the line?
Most of them did. Well, it's not that many.
We still may find that line somewhere. We may find it somewhere.
It would have to be flying around in the ether. But if you have a more most sensitive antenna, who knows what might be flying around in the ether? John Ford is one of those people that made the transfer from radio to television in the earlier days. He was one of the early news anchors. I think he was on Channel 9, but I could be wrong about that.
So you had your broadcast debut.
Yes.
And did that give you the broadcasting bug, or is that what...
No,
what,
I don't think so.
Okay.
I didn't actually... Well, of course, I listened to the radio a lot. We all did there in the 50s, when we had some really fine personality radio. We had the birthing of Top 40 radio, WDGY. Woo-hoo. And the story is told, by the way, of one of the fellows that was working at WDGY when that change came to Top 40. Because mm-hmm. WDGY had been a typical full-service station. They had a huge record library and
right.
played music. And the stores people came in and said, okay, the story may have been embellished, but they backed the truck up to the back door and took all of those records from that record library and put them in the truck and came back in with a little rack of 40 records and said, here we go.
Top 40?
Top
only 40.
Top 40, over and over.
What were some of the top 40 hits of that time?
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, it was Elvis Presley.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, any of those. But it was still a wide enough top 40 that you would have Patti Page singing a nifty ballad and an interesting variety.
Was like CCO playing this kind of stuff at the time, or was this too modern for?
No, they wouldn't have been playing the top 40 songs. No,
right. Because in this day, this is the era of all, what was it called, all, where you have news, music, talk, you have the whole...
Oh, yeah, the full service.
Full service.
The whole thing,
right.
And most stations did that. And also, just ahead of that, the network stations had their dramatic programs,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was the time that television gradually took over that role. No longer are you listening to Dragnet on the radio, you're watching Dragnet on television.
That's right.
So what's a radio station to do with television has siphoned off that. And then just at that time, a wonderful coincidence, the idea of Top 40 radio. And you could say, a person might say, that helped to just save radio as a medium there in the middle 50s.
So after graduating high school, was it straight to Brown Institute?
It was.
Did you have some other careers before that?
Nope, that was all. Well, during high school, I lived out in near Excelsior, and I worked summers in the amusement park.
Oh, sure.
So anything you want to know about cotton candy,
We might have a show just on the amusement park coming up this summer. But
That would be a good thing.
We'll do it. Let's talk about Brown Institute, though. Tell me about Brown Institute. Now it's Brown College.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about Brown Institute in the 1950s when you went to...
Oh, sure.
Was it down and up on Lake Street when you...
It was on Lake Street, yes, indeed, yep. Upstairs on the second floor, one in the center of a two-story building on East Lake Street. And three studios and one electronics classroom.
One electronics classroom, right. And what, after graduating from Brown, what was a two-year program in those days?
No, it was less than a year.
Okay.
Less than a year.
Get your FCC license and then you're ready to...
Third class restricted radio telephone operator's permit is what I have.
So there was a time that you actually had to have, the FCC had to approve people who were on the air. You didn't just get to go on and...
I think that's a pretty wide definition of approve. The approval was for technical to be able to read the transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
They did not approve the talent.
Mm-hmm. So after Brown, you went to WSPT Stevens Point.
That's true. Yes, it did. Yep.
And were a disc jockey, and then eventually KRIB.
In Mason City, Iowa.
And then back to Minnesota at KDHL.
In Faribault.
And after all that, you come back to Minneapolis, and you become a teacher at the institute you were
yes.
at 6 years ago. Now, tell me a little bit about you. You'd done some radio, and what brought you back to teaching?
It was a call from, well, it was a combination of calls. I was going to do a career day event at the high school in Faribault, and so I called up to Brown to ask to send a few brochures. I could show those to the students as one of the career opportunities. And shortly after that, or maybe it was the same call, one of the people from Brown called and said, hey, have you ever thought about teaching? And I'm not sure that I had, but, well, that sounded interesting because my experience at Brown was just a very, very positive experience. A great crew and a fun program, of course. What could be better than teaching people how to do this?
And I'm imagining it was probably, not to get too personal this respect, but a steadier paycheck probably, a little maybe more... solid job than working in a couple different radio
yes,
stations.
Yes, I think you could say that, sure. Yep. Plus, I was startled when I think of it. It was a 5-day-a-week job.
All right.
In radio in those days, or television for that matter, it's always a 6-day week with 1 day off. And now suddenly here it was, ooh,
And you had weekends off.
Weekends, not Wednesday. A couple of years at KDHL, my day off was Wednesday, which is really kind of nice because everybody else is working. So whatever you want to do.
Doctor, the car repairs, you're first in line.
You bet.
So you're a young guy when you joined the faculty at Brown Institute. How many teachers were there at that point?
Half dozen, I think, probably.
And compared to when you were there even a few years before, television was now in color and broadcasting itself was evolving rapidly. I'm guessing there's a lot more aspiring broadcasters when you were there as an educator in the 1960s than there was when you graduated not long before.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. And then the size of the school, I could stand on Lake Street where the school was on the second floor, one hallway, a couple of studios, and show you how the school expanded across the street and over to that corner and over to that corner. And so we had more radio studios. We had the television studio then and students to fill them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, again, my guess is where I fit in today's Flashback Twin Cities. You decided to moonlight again. You decided that you wanted to work 7 days a week again because you're working at Brown 5 days a week. And about 1970 or so, that station over on University Avenue. How did you get the position over at KSDP to do voiceover and weather?
Well, at KSDP, the job that was open was what is called a booth announcer, and that was the voice that you heard between programs saying, this is KSDP TV, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And that was not on camera, that was off camera, so that's radio with somebody else turning
right.
the switch.
Over the slide, slide,
yep,
right?
Exactly. And so they needed somebody to be a part-time booth announcer. It would have been it was a couple days a week, I think, a couple nights, nights a week, and maybe some weekends. And so I did that and enjoyed it very much. And while I was doing that, the person that was doing the weekend weather left, Pete Evanson left. And so now there was an opportunity for weather. And so I said, I'll bet I could do that. And they agreed that maybe you could. And so I did it one night, and I finished on time, and they liked that, and said, okay.
And you were able to use a Sharpie marker and draw on the map. And
Big black marker.
Make sense of all those charts and graphs.
The highs and the lows.
Let's, I play this track very often, but it's almost like our second theme song here at the show. And
3-3.
Number 3, that's right.
The Guild of Performing Arts at 333-8268 for reservations.
Eyewitness News, the Northwest's most complete, comprehensive, and up-to-the-minute coverage. With weatherman Roy Finden, sportscaster Ed Caro, and anchorman Stan Turner.
Good evening, everyone. We are coming on the air at this.
I love hearing that old theme song.
They played it live for us when we were at the broadcast dinner a few years ago. We had the live band there, and they were able to
That's
play it.
That's right. They did. Oh. I'd forgotten that.
That track was from WPVI. It was called the Action News Theme, and Philadelphia was the first station to have that. And Channel 5 got a lot of years out of use of that, theme, and we play it all the time here.
I thought the last time I'd heard it, I think on one of your pieces, that what a person should have if he knew how to do it, and I'm an analog guy, so of course I don't know how to do it, would be to have that as my ringtone.
There's a way to do that.
I'm sure,
give me your cell phone afterward. We'll take care of that. So you're at KSDP and you did weekends. So you're working at Brown 5 days a week and doing weekends. What was that like? You're working 7 days a week.
It wasn't 7 days a week because in those days, the major newscasters, the major lineup worked 6 days.
Okay.
So I was just doing one day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Saturday. And then it was shortly after Ron Majors started that they shifted to having the major players working only Monday through Friday. So then my weather became 2 days, two nights. And so, yes, I was working 7 days a week, but still on camera for 3.5 minutes. It isn't like I was working hard.
Wait a second now. I thought this broadcast. Wait a second now. So are you telling your students this kind of stuff? You don't really work when you go into broadcasting.
Well, compared to other things.
No, that's true.
And every day when almost every day as I'm driving somewhere, I look around and identify the jobs I'm glad I don't have.
Very true.
Now, there's the UPS truck trying to find a place to park.
When it's 100 degrees outside or it's terrible.
Right. And here's a big tanker trying to find a way to back into a Holiday station. I'm glad I'm not doing that. And then there are all those people building the light rail in the winter. I'm glad I don't. So compared to any of those.
Really does put things into a little bit of perspective, doesn't it?
Well, stand in front of the camera and of course, prepare the valid information and present it in what would hope an interesting way. But it's not hard physical labor.
That's not at least yet. I mean, the way broadcast consolidation is coming, it might come that way. But my guest Roy Finder today, talking about his days at Brown Institute and at KSGP. Let's talk a little bit about those KSGP days, the early days when you first got there, and you were what was it like working there?
Always very pleasant. Everyone is very pleasant. Very high degree of determination any night to make the program as good as possible, because one of the things that makes the Twin Cities the major news player that it always has been is the extreme competition for audience among the news programs. And so at KSDP, the producers, all the people on the air, the writers, the reporters, they're working hard to put it all together every day. And it's a pleasant place to work.
Well, and at the time, this was a record-breaking moment in KSDP's history. I mean, they were getting shares of 51%, which is, you know, it may happen again at some point, but it's been a while since they've been number one and that dominant in the market or even the country.
That's true. They go up and down. The audience, KSDP's audience, declined in that major moment in 1968. When Channel 4 opened up the 10 o'clock news, I think they called it The Scene Tonight, and the newscaster and the weathercaster and the sportscaster were all in the same shot at the same desk. We'd never seen that. You know, 20 years of broadcasting, the news was a separate program, the weather was a separate program, the sports was a separate program. Those people could have been in different states. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But now, suddenly, there are the three of them, and when it came time for the weather, Dave Moore looked over at old Bud and said, "Well, Bud, what's the weather going to be? We've never seen that anywhere before." And so that was terribly popular. And so Channel 4 took a big chunk of audience at that time.
Well, and your boss didn't really like to be second to Channel 4.
Isn't that true?
Mr. Hubbard.
Yes.
Both of them. Let's listen to a little bit of a weather forecast from 1980.
May I begin with a snap quiz? Oh, well, certainly. All right, I want you to look at the monitor here in the studio and see if you can identify this bridge. It's a local bridge.
I'd say that's a high bridge in St. Paul.
Exactly right.
Oh,
that is, yes.
This was not rigged, ladies and gentlemen.
No. This was in 1904, and it's not when it was being built. It was just after being hit by a tornado, a storm system that tornadoes touched down in both downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I bring that up because I want to remind you that tomorrow night, right after Eyewitness News, the KSDP Weather Service's program, The Killer Tornadoes, A New Defense, will be on. And I want you to watch. The word ubiquitous comes to mind when we talk about the 80s on today's map. Ubiquitous meaning all over the place. That sounds strange, like a quiz bowl question, too, doesn't it? Well, look at this. 80s, and 70s were even wider ranging. It's got to be a...
Doesn't that sound pleasant right now?
That's quite a page from... Whatever book that was.
That's right. That was it's the high bridge, and this video is on tcmedianow.com. Giving a little quiz to the news anchor, spontaneously, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes. Everything was spontaneous. Nothing planned.
So talk to me. So you work on KSDP, you're doing weather, and you weren't a meteorologist. You were a broadcaster.
Yes.
You weren't a trained you didn't have
scientist.
No. How did you gain the knowledge to be able to just broadcast weather?
Well, first, from being in radio, where we did weather in the radio, and doing it on television is a little different because you have to be doing something that people can see, but the information is is all available on the various wire services, so just collecting it and putting it together. And then when the whole corral of meteorologists showed up at KSDP, I learned an awful lot from them, and was even able to qualify for the AMS seal of approval for television weathercasting.
Well, I was going to get to that because it's a big deal, or was a big deal at the time, to have that AMS tagline on your title when you were doing the weather.
Yeah.
And at first they were called professional meteorologists, and then they got the AMS, and it was who was AMS and who wasn't AMS, and you had the AMS tag on your...
Yes, I had to pass a written test and then submit some tapes of my work to the board, and lo and behold, they sent me back my seal of approval.
You couldn't be called a meteorologist, but you could get your AMS.
Yeah, right, sure.
So beyond, and talk about some of your students you had at this period. So you've taught a lot of, we'll call locally famous people here in this town.
Yes, I think I'd be reluctant to try to begin to name them because I'd be sure I was going to miss someone.
Name a couple.
Well, I suppose the highest profile one right today is Chuck Hagel, the newly appointed defense secretary. Chuck was here from Nebraska in 1966.
We were talking about that off-air a couple weeks ago. I don't think people know that. I don't think it's really been publicized too much here in town here that he was a Brown Institute graduate and was a student of yours. What was his aspirations? Do you recall?
Just like most of the others in the studio at that time, they wanted to be on the radio.
Sure.
But it was shortly after he left Brown that he joined the Army.
Right.
And then he worked down in Nebraska as a newscaster when he came back, and then on into some other private businesses.
Well, he'll be on TV and radio plenty the next couple of years here.
Yes.
So his dream will come true.
Yes, and I'll sit and critique as I'm watching.
Well, it is a bit unnerving for me, as I we're talking about there. I didn't take the traditional broadcast education here, and I imagine you have a set of notes for me after the show here. But no, it's great having you here. Again, my guest is Roy Findon. Let's take a break. If we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Channel 5 and the High School Bowl, and then Days of Care and more on Brown, and I'm still going to try to get you to talk about more of your students and maybe some stories. Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Oslin with my guest, Roy Findon. And one of my favorite programs you did was called High School Bowl.
High School Bowl, sure, yeah.
I want to hear just a little bit of a clip of that. Let's listen to that, James.
Channel 5, KSTP-TV, St. Paul, Minneapolis.
Here's the kickoff toss-up question in this morning's High School Bowl. What do we call the colored portion of a vertebrate's eye?
Saucer, a dinah.
The iris.
That's right, for 10 points.
Join outstanding scholars from Twin Cities and suburban area schools as they match wits on this week's High School Bowl, sponsored in part by Ashland Oil. And now, your quizmaster, Roy Findon.
Good morning and welcome to the High School Bowl. Nothing like a little stimulation of the mind on an April-ish morning. This morning we're at quarterfinal time. We've got communities that are adjacent to each other competing. Southwest, the southwest section of Minneapolis, and Edina East, a suburb of Minneapolis. They're right across the line, and they'll be answering the questions next on today's High School Bowl.
Quizmaster, I like that.
It's one of those programs I get tons of, that and Bowling for Dollars, I get tons of emails asking, can you just play my tape that I was on this week? 29, sure. 30 years ago.
Sure.
If I had the library, I'd do it.
Oh, sure. Oh, gosh, yes.
But that was the era where a lot of those tapes were bulk erased and probably used over and over again.
Sure.
Fortunate to have one, which you gave me. Thank you for that.
Sure.
TCMedianow.com if you want to watch the whole thing. You can learn a lot.
It was a fun program to do.
How many years was that on?
Oh, gosh. Jim Hutton was the quizmaster before me. And I don't know how many years she had done it, several. I suppose 10 or 12 years altogether, I think.
Yeah, that's a long time. It's a long time for a run-up program.
Did you retain a lot of information from the questions that you asked, or was it you spoke the question and sort of moved on?
Let me do this. Let me give you a 10-point toss-up.
Oh, no.
The two of you.
This is not going to end well.
Here we go. Which is correct? The whites of eggs are yellow or the whites of eggs is yellow? Come on.
The whites of eggs is yellow.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. The whites of eggs are white. It's the yolks that are
yellow. Oh, you.
Couldn't resist.
Who's in Grant's tomb?
Couldn't resist.
That's great there, Roy. Thank you for making us feel also intelligent this morning. No, it's a great show. And so you left Channel 5 around 1980. And you strictly back to training or teaching. I want to kill a couple names. Rod Grams, Tom Bernard, John Hines. These are all guys you taught.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Does anyone, these names I brought up, did you, when you were teaching them, did you think that, okay, these guys are going to make it? Or did you think, you might want to find a different position?
No, of course, John will always recall the day that he says that I said to him, have you thought of doing another industry?
Right.
Neither of us remembers exactly what exactly he had done to provoke that suggestion from me. But he always brings that up. He said, look, Roy, it came out all right. And sure enough.
Well, he was one of the youngest morning DJs in history. I think he was about 23, 24 years old when he was at 1500 in the mornings.
For many years.
That's right. And then Twin Cities Today. And he's always found a job. He's been working for a long time, one of the survivors in the industry.
Well, he does the work. He did television for a while. He did that morning television program.
Twin Cities Today.
On Channel 5. And now over at WCCO, that's as good as it gets.
Right. And then, again, former Senator Rod Grams was at Channel 9 for a long time. And
sure.
Again, he had his time on TV. And Tom Bernard, I'm trying to think of anyone else that comes to mind. I remember when I toured Brown one time, there was a whole list of people that they have in the lobby of the alumni that we should know. Mm-hmm. But you went to CARE. And let's talk about that a little bit. How were you seeking out another TV job, or did they seek you out?
They called me to do the morning program a couple of days a week, and so I did. That was easier. At the earliest times that I did the weather at Channel 5, I did it all.
Mm-hmm.
I came in and collected the information, decided what I was going to use, and then just did the program. All produced it and aired it. When the meteorologists arrived, they put together all that information, and so I just had to come in and
take the charts and take the words and
say them. And that was true at Channel 11 as well. They there was a meteorologist there always who produced it all, decided what graphics they were going to be and in what order they were going to be. And so all I had to do was just remember what the order was. And
no teleprompters, too, right? You weren't using teleprompters at 5.
No.
You were all through script and through memory.
Yes.
And so how did you recall all those numbers on the weather map when you were writing them in?
I don't suppose it's a secret. All of that information was put on with a small China marker
mm-hmm.
on the board. So I can see it, but the camera didn't pick it up.
The illusion
trick
of the mind.
Of the trade.
Well, yes, I suppose.
But in 1986, when you go to CARE, there was no more markers, and no more chalk. It was all computerized, and they had teleprompters too at 11, right?
Yes, I didn't use it. Did not use it. I just had a big sheet of paper with the order of the graphics.
Let's flash back in 1986 and listen to a little bit of the CARE 11.
Guten Morgen, wir sind die Deutschklasse von Taden High School.
Guten Morgen, 11 Country.
Now, the Twin Cities' fastest growing television news, News 11 Sunrise, with John Bachman, Amy Powell, Steve Carroll on sports. And the weather with Roy Finden.
Good morning to you. Welcome to Sunrise. We've reached the week's end, Friday, April 17th. Good Friday.
Good Friday indeed. And I like that opening this morning from Tartan High School that was on our open there.
Yeah, what did
we
say?
The German class.
That was a German class?
Yes, yes.
How did you know?
Well, because I was there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known.
Impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice group.
Good. Roy Fenton is a pretty good guy, too. He's with us.
Good morning.
How's the weather? Hi.
May I take that word, impressive? I'm making plans for the day, and on my log I have afternoon nap on the porch. Wait till you see the July-like weather that we have in store today. It's going to be just fine.
Sounds
more
great.
Details later. Thank you, Roy. Topping Sunrise this morning, though.
What a great preview of the day.
Yeah, that was very different to do in that it was an hour program and then I appeared four different times, and so that was different.
Was it not just the word easier, but was it compared to 10 years prior in doing weather, was it a little bit more comfortable to do weather at 11 with the technology and with the what they had behind it?
Not especially for me. I still enjoy the liveness of somebody with a big marker. And I love all of the graphics, but I still watch Barry's Evans tapes, and I love him with his big marker, and he's explaining clearly what's happening. When he's finished, it is not a finished industrial product, scientific product, because everything that he has put on has come on top of itself and around itself. But as he's putting it down, it makes perfect clarity. Here's this front is coming here, and here's the temperature in Bird Island. And
that's right, Bird Island. Everyone knew the temperature of Bird Island for a long time.
Yes.
Roy Fenton, about CARE and John Bachman, who was just retired, yes, actually, from WHO-TV,
yes,
after many years. A story you told me, which I do enjoy, you went to Des Moines, Iowa.
Yes.
You went to WHO-TV, where John Bachman, who was an anchor Channel 11, also worked at Channel 5 for a long time. You asked,
Is John Bachman still your news? Still reading your news?
And they didn't like that question.
The person that let me in, the receptionist, just kind of raised up in her chair and said, "John Bachman is our anchor." I appreciate that. She's.
And he was your intern, or was he? What was he? Your floor director, Channel 5.
He was working almost in several different places. He did some sports. One day when I was not available for some reason, and I'm not sure whether it was behind Barry or Johnny Morris, there was nobody to do the weather. And so John volunteered to do it. And he always said that's the hardest television he'd ever done, was trying to do the weather.
Well, he didn't have the science down of the tracing the marker, probably, and probably didn't... there's a lot going on with that weather reporting. Probably those are the days you had to write everything down on all those blocks, and you had to turn that, like the Wheel of Fortune block.
Sure.
You had to turn around.
Yeah.
And to give you a visual, who's listening here, was a Chiron. That was the device you typed in the weather forecast and saw it, nice print. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like comparing maybe a handwritten letter to a word processed letter old days.
Yes, exactly right. Yes, we actually did have on this board that actually printed out the day's forecast, and I do recall this was a cube that turned. It was part of the set. On one side was the map of the three states that included Bird Island, and then on another side was the forecast, and then on the other on a third side was the current conditions. And one night I remember, and I don't remember how or why, I got my thumb caught in the space as it went turning around, and I didn't pay much attention to it, but when it was over and I looked down, I said, my thumb was bleeding. I said, well, my goodness, I injured myself doing the television weather, in the big cube.
See, I don't know if the UPS guy would injure his thumb. You know, if they're a good one, they may not do that.
You're taking all these risks.
Yeah, that's a risky job. I want to hear. Actually, this is a promotion from Brown College that aired in 1984.
The forecast for July is traditionally sunny and hot. Traditionally, a vacation from school. But there's nothing traditional about computer information systems and business management. That's why at Brown Institute in Minneapolis, we schedule classes to start in July. To get a head start on your future, call Brown now for information on a July class. Call 721-2481. 721-2481. At Brown Institute, the only thing traditional is the commitment to excellence. National Education Center, Brown Institute campus.
There you go.
Sure enough.
Retired in 2001. Are you part of Brown in any capacity right now?
I'm not, no.
You're not. But you've been doing a lot. You're not retired. You're still doing a lot of interesting stuff.
Well, I'm spending a couple of days a week leading tours of the State Capitol building in St. Paul.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's fascinating. Well, it's a fascinating place, but leading groups of frequently school children through the building, and they are frequently awed by the building. And so that's just great fun. I just get a lot of energy from them. During the month of May, we'll have in the neighborhood of 20,000 fifth graders come through the building.
That's a lot of energy.
It's a lot of fifth graders, and they're and some of the rooms say the governor's reception room is a particularly elegant space, and they will often exclaim as they walk through the door and they see it. And the language changes year to year. A couple of years ago, the popular word, they would come through the door and say, cool.
Sure.
And then the year after that, they would come through the door and say, awesome. And then, was it last year or the year before, one of the fifth graders came through the door and just said, dude.
Well, there you go.
I assume that's good, but I don't.
Has sick been said? Like, oh, sick.
Oh, sure. That's another one, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea what fifth graders are saying.
Oh, these kids today.
I need to go on a tour, I think, of the Capitol with the fifth graders.
I can arrange that.
Well, I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
Now, besides fifth graders, can anyone go and take a tour? And
oh, sure, yeah.
How can someone get a tour from Roy Findon?
Well, that's just luck, because the schedule changes day to day and time of day to time of day. But there's a tour every hour on the hour from 10 to 2, Monday through Saturday. Just walk right in.
And costs anything?
No. The Minnesota Historical Society operates the tours. They are always anxious to have a donation if someone wants to make a donation. But no, it takes about 45 minutes.
We had Danny Henry from the Pavick Museum of Broadcasting on last week, and there's a lot of great things in this town you can do on a Saturday afternoon. You can go to the Pavick Museum and St. Louis Park, and go to the Capitol, and the Pavick Museum charges a very small amount to go tour the great institution with the radios and TV broadcasting history, and of course the Capitol. You were inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2002. You were one of the first, the second year that the Hall of Fame was in progress here in the Twin Cities. Tell me, I mean, I know you don't do this for honors awards, but how was that to be inducted to the Hall of Fame?
Oh, it's wonderful. Oh, my goodness. And a big surprise when I got the letter. See, I don't think I even knew about the Hall of Fame. And was very, very pleased. And the evening was wonderful. Former Governor Arne Carlson was the MC, and he handed me my plaque. I have a picture of that, of course. Well, what is better than a room full of broadcasters? I mean, there's nothing better than a room full
of a room full of broadcasters right now.
It's true. I rest my case.
We're great company.
There you are.
We don't know about egg yolks, but, I mean, we might be able to tell you how to...
I'm a little bitter about that still.
The cough button and the audio board we can probably help you with. So you got your plaque, and it's a great institution, and it's a great event, and it's going to be this September, actually.
Yes.
I was trying to probe Danny on where it's going to be, and they're determining where the location's going to be. It's going to be a good event, though. But there's some great names there, you know, Steve Cannon and Franklin Hobbs, some great broadcast names, and your name's part of it. Stan Turner, our 12 o'clock host, is also part of the Hall of Fame. And I'm guessing there's a few of your students that are in the Hall of Fame right now, too.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. There are altogether about 30 Brown graduates. And I'm not sure how many of them I could name.
I had the list last week, and I should have brought it with me. We could have read some names. But it's a very impressive list. And it's larger than I thought it was. I think they did about 10 a year. And they didn't do one this year, but they're going to do one next year.
Yeah.
It's a pretty large roster now.
Yeah, oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Both the Twin Cities and outstate, and I encourage people to nominate someone. Go to museumofbroadcasting.org. So when you do your Capitol tours, do you get a lot of people that recognize you from your TV days or former students?
Occasionally someone does, not frequently.
The fifth graders might not, but
no, I guess
but,
not.
There might be some well, they might be on the web watching things on tcmedianow.com.
There are.
But I would imagine so. But that's what James is doing in there right now, actually. I think he's on the website. You must get some people remember you and want to talk about talk about broadcasting.
They hear the voice and like, hey, wait a second. That sounds familiar.
Yes, once in a while. That's always fun to be recognized and chat briefly about television and or the weather. Sure.
It's a high degree of responsibility. I want to play one more clip. This is from also 1980, and this is with Ron Majors.
Remained very dry today.
Yes, it did. I'd like to point out that we have a brand new weather term to initiate tonight. It's a Feltkin blockage.
Feltkin blockage.
And that is the phenomenon which leaves the same pattern in the upper airs the entire time that Dennis leaves. So when he's back from vacation, he's got the same upper air pattern as when he left. And that's true. It's been about 10 days. Same stuff going on up aloft.
That's right. He's coming back tomorrow then.
He'll be back.
Will there be a change tomorrow?
Probably not.
Oh.
The present temperature it's never that simple. 60 degrees. The dew point is 33. Relative humidity is 36%. The wind is from the northeast at 14. The pressure is rising.
So a new term, Feltkin blockage. Yes. I like that.
And I'm reminded when we hear the dew point, that arrived with Dr. Walt Lyons. I remember quite clearly the first day Dr. Walt was in the studio, I was doing the 6 o'clock weather, and he was just getting acquainted. And the program was over, and we went over and chattered, and he said, "You don't use the dew point, huh?" And I said, "No."
Now, at least you didn't say, "What is a dew point?"
No, I could have. But you, no, oh, okay. And so now we have the dew point. And we hope that people appreciate the value of the dew point. And in those days, it was so unusual that we actually had to have a little ready reckoner to take the humidity and the temperature to calculate what the dew point was. Today, of course, the hourly from Weather Service includes the dew point.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't at that time. Actually, I had to take the information from the aviation weather wire, to have the dew point.
See, and I'll do respect as a viewer. I know we would say, well, why do we need to know the dew point?
I'll explain it. In terms of comfort, as a comfort index,
mm-hmm.
Your comfort in the summer is dependent upon the amount of water vapor in the air.
Right.
So it's the actual quantity. So you determines how quickly your body cools itself via evaporation. So if you want to know the quantity of water vapor in the air, the relative humidity is of no value. If I ask you how much gas you had in your car, and you said half a tank,
mm-hmm.
do I have any idea how much gas you have? No, I don't know what your tank is. I don't even know what kind of a car you have. That's relative humidity. If I ask you how much gasoline you had in your car, and you said 12 gallons, that's precise.
I see.
Okay, that's what the dew point is. The dew point is a finite measure of the water vapor in the air.
Dr. Walt brought a lot of those terms to KSDP and to broadcasting this point forward. Roy, thank you for being on today. It's been great talking about...
What, are we finished? Oh, for heaven's sakes.
We can do this for... we'll do part two sometime soon. This is great. No,
it's been a pleasure.
Roy Findon, Capitol Tours. Go say hi to Roy and take a tour of the Capitol. It's a great tour. Museum of Broadcasting to see Roy's biography and Roy's video, which we didn't get to the weather snowball fight today. We'll do that next time.
All right.
This is Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220.